Hello, I'm Keith and the Girls, Keith Malley.
I'm Chemda.
Welcome to My Opening Line, where we talk to your favorite artistes and we find out, how did they start?
And why did they continue?
Because I don't get it, but thank God they did, right? First of all, let me mention this, Laughable.com. It's a free app that you subscribe to podcasts, but you can also subscribe to the person.
So if someone's a guest on a podcast that you like, but they don't have a podcast of their own, you actually can follow the person. So if he guests on anything, if he ends up having a podcast of their own.
Yes. For example, you can follow Chemda. And any show that Chemda's on, any podcast of any kind.
And I like to talk a lot.
It pops into your feed automatically.
I'm right in there.
You don't got to follow her like a creep on the streets. On the subway, it's easy. She has a busted leg now. She moves kind of slow. But still, you have a life, probably a job, maybe kids. Let it pop into your phone automatically, all right? You're welcome. Ladies and gentlemen, today's guest featured on Fox, True TV, Comedy Central, MTV. An excellent new stand-up album entitled, I always say entitled. That's not right.
No?
Titled.
Oh.
I think it, I want to be fancy, I think.
What's entitled then?
When you're entitled, when you think have the right to make up words like entitled. The album is called I Think It Just Kicked In, number one on iTunes, of course. Your pal and mine, Mike Cannon.
Oh, man, thanks for having me. The album success has made me quite entitled.
Right? So, yeah. That's what I meant. I'm like, not entitled album. This guy tried, but...
He's a true piece of shit since its release.
It's so good to see you. How long have you been in comedy? I know that's a big thing, a big point of contention. You see somebody on a late night show, and they've been in for a year or two. Who the hell are they? It almost doesn't matter how good they are. You need to know that they struggled, right?
Sure, yeah, but people struggled differently. So I don't know. I count when I started for real in January of 2009.
Okay.
But my first time doing stand up was like I did a handful of sporadic sets in college.
Okay.
Where did you do that?
I did it at Comics Cafe in Rochester, New York. It's since been shut down for drug trafficking and tax evasion.
Oh, so it was a fun place.
It was very fun. Yeah. I did stand up my English teacher, who also made me cry, but she, in seventh grade, she was super hot. She gave me...
She was so hot that you cried?
She was so hot that I was in love with her, and she hurt me so bad, she made me cry. I like remember, because she was so super into how, I was funny and charming, and so she'd give me a lot of slack, and then out of nowhere would kind of like put the hammer down. So it wasn't really consistent to me, and just one time she caught me so by surprise, I just started crying in the middle of class.
Is that why you're into S&M now?
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah, I like my nuts clamped.
It all makes sense.
How old were you then?
I was 13, I guess, in seventh grade. So okay. I she would let me do 20 minutes every Friday last class of the week. Yeah, eighth period quiet study. But she knew nobody was going to be quiet. Nobody was doing homework. So she would give me 20 minutes. And I'd basically do...
That's a long time for a little kid.
Yeah.
I don't want to hear a 13-year-old talk for 20 minutes.
I don't think anybody did. But, but it started because I was doing the voices for Shakespeare and when we would read out loud and act out stuff in class. So I would just do ridiculous voices.
And one mushed your head in for that?
No, they loved it.
Wow.
Because I was also an athlete. So it was weird. Oh, okay. I had the confidence of somebody popular, but the artistic fragile heart of a, sweet artiste.
Big dick energy.
Yeah,
nice.
Well, that's one way to put it.
I remember being the same age. There was a girl in my class. She was mentally challenged. So it was rude of the teacher to do this, but she would whisper to somebody and the teacher said, you know what? You like to make people laugh? Stand up and make everybody laugh. Mm-hmm. And it was to embarrass her. But she stood up and she did the funniest shit. She's like, she picks her nose. There's a booger on the end. She goes, E.T., phone home. With her perfect girl laughing. She goes, sit down. I was supposed to make you contemplate suicide. Sit the fuck down. You're making friends, weirdo.
Oh, that's the best when abuse backfires.
Yeah.
I wasn't supposed to install self-esteem in you.
By the way, when you're working at a place that later gets busted for tax evasion, you look back, did they pay you?
They did not, no.
Look at that. They were evading their taxes anyway. They couldn't even pay you.
Not to mention, they shouldn't have. Comics are trying to form a union and stuff like that. And they have that idea. But it can't really happen because you have to start for free. And then you don't know, there's no clear cut line of when you should start being paid. It's when you get good enough, do you actually deserve getting paid? And some people just never get good enough.
How old are you?
I'm 34.
Okay. I asked that because I'm 45 and I know when I saw stand up on TV, it was few and far between. You bought the VHS tapes, whether it was Dice or Eddie Murphy.
Oh yeah, I had Raw like on tape.
Yeah, or we didn't have money, but we'd be at a hotel and we'd catch somebody special, Paula Poundstone, whoever, on HBO.
Yeah, I'd babysit my cousin and get to watch like a special because they had cable.
Mm-hmm. Right. Was things easier for you to get being 10 years younger?
No, so I didn't grow up with cable. I was like an outdoor kid. I didn't have video games. I didn't have anything like that. I definitely loved TV and watched as much comedy as I could.
Right.
But I ran into stand-up accidentally when I was 7. I remember the first time my dad and grandfather were watching Jammin' in New York, Carlin's 92 special.
Right.
And I was 7 years old, 6, 7. And I was like hiding on the steps because it was late. I wasn't allowed to watch it or anything like that.
And he said the 7 bad words.
He said the one line. And it's funny because I don't even know if it truly exists. I haven't gone back to check the special, but this is what's in my memory as something that changed my life. I heard George Carlin say, "It smelled like an anchovy's cunt." And my father and grandfather both like fell off their respective couches, were laughing so hard, and I laughed, not knowing what any of it meant, but just seeing the reaction it caused, and I was like, I can do that someday. I want it. Yeah, that's something I want.
Did you start trying to make them laugh after that?
I was always that. I mean, my mom, I grew up when my mom was like, she's depressive.
Your mom's making you dinner and you're like, is this anchovy cunt? What? Okay. No. Okay.
She's like, weird. That's tomorrow. It was a surprise for your father.
He's so amused by it.
Yeah. He couldn't stop thinking about it.
So it is good comedy that got you into that.
Right? I think so. I mean, but I also like, I remember one of the hardest times I've ever laughed was watching TGIF with my mom and my sister. We used to always put a towel down on the floor and like eat pizza and watch TGIF like it was a picnic.
Cute.
And one of the hardest I've ever laughed was Steve Urkel sitting outside Laura Winslow's window. And he like played something but just fell backwards off the tree. And the sound he made, I think I laughed for like 35 minutes.
Accordion or something.
Accordion, his just everything about it. It was so dumb. That also appeals to me. So it's good comedy, and also I have...
Oh, so you're just mean.
Yeah, but also farts, and just it's like the simplest shit.
I still laugh when people burp sometimes if it's funny. Yeah. I don't know why, it's funny to me.
If it's funny, if it's the right tone.
It really is.
But not if you have indigestion, but if it's funny.
Not if it's a serious gurgle. I made my aunt pull over once because I farted after a summer league basketball game, and it filled the car, like as if we were hotboxing it. And it caught in the back of her throat and she started coughing and like dry heaving. Ew. So much. She pulled her car over and we had to like open the fucking doors and like let it air out.
What were they feeding you?
I mean, just pure protein.
Look at me.
Yeah.
Guess. Do you remember the very first joke that you told when you would consider... Like, hey, this is, I'm giving it my all.
So in seventh grade, I told the Dana Carvey stand-up special. That was my whole thing, where he did the chunk on OJ. Mr. Fung, on the day you handled the gloves, did you shampoo your hair? Like, he did this whole breakdown of the courtroom scene. I didn't even know what the fuck it meant, but I'm just quoting all these OJ jokes. And it's like killing for other kids that have no clue what it means. It's like, it's ridiculous. And then when I actually started stand-up, I think my first joke was about like handing a fake ID to the bartender or something like that, like very collegiate, very what I was going through in the time, and having to fight off some steroid abusing maniac who like was, you know, giving me a rubber glove up the ass or something. It was super pretty much what I do right now.
Was your dad proud of you? Is he like, oh, like, this isn't, I don't know why I let you over here. I didn't let you over here, but you overheard anchovy's cunt. Now I got a son with a fake job. What's he do for a living?
My father, I don't know entirely. I think he's like in health insurance or something like that. But he was an actor when I was growing up. He quit, I believe, when I was born. And
hated you ever since.
Verbally, let it be known that it was our fault.
Oh,
that
yeah.
He never,
otherwise, he would have made it.
Of course.
He's so charismatic.
He is, actually. Like, that's the scary thing. It's like, not even scary. That's the thing when people are like, I met your dad. He's great. And I'm like, yeah, of course. He's super charming. He's really smart. He's very funny. And he's just... You know, he's just a dark guy. Some shit gets fucking dark in families and, you know, interpersonal relationships.
You know, I do want to talk about this with you on Keith and the Girl, because there's so many similarities between your dad and mine. And I wonder if getting into comedy was almost had anything to do with him or not.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know because, well, so funny enough, and I'll rewind all of this, but since I've been doing okay at comedy, my dad went back to acting and two of my uncles started doing stand up. It's like Irish support. It's like, well, if this fucking idiot can do it, we could all, why can't we vault our dreams? You know, it's like,
I saw my dad the other day. He's like, chopping broccoli, chopping broccoli. And I'm like, all right, dad, you don't know what you're saying.
But yeah, I mean, that stuff, I think, helped me. Like, I've been in, like, performance kind of since I was a kid. I used to sing show tunes for company as a child. Like, my parents would wheel me out in front of, you know, other families that were over. Because both of my sisters are musical actual prodigies. They're fluent in the piano by 4 years old. I never knew any instruments. I could kind of hold a tune, and that's basically it. Right. But since then, I've always been the athlete and the funny one. So okay. That's what I had to offer.
Did you do well the first time?
Yeah, I crushed. Yeah. And I think I did something about urinals and just like the wall of piss, not the urinals where it's separated. It's just like those Fenway Park tubs where you just have to put your awful Irish dick next to every other awful Irish dick. And it was just talking about the insecurity of going eye to eye with other dicks. And, you know, it was very 21 year old shit.
I don't like when people get fancy with the bathrooms. Just have your simple stall, this kind of thing. Somebody.
Oh, when they get modern and it's like, now we're all looking at each other. Now we're in a circle.
Yeah.
Somebody said, hey, the bathroom's around the corner. I work at some fancy restaurant. And I go around the corner, all I see is a fish tank. And they're like, yeah, it's right around the corner. I'm like, I don't see it. It's right there. And I'm like, well, if we're going to have an attitude, I guarantee I pissed on a fish tank. Like, it had this water cascading. And I'm like, this is weird. And and looking back, I did have to be on my tiptoes to go over some bar that was there. So that can't be normal. I'm tall as it is. But I'm like, all right, if that's the bathroom.
You pissed through a filter.
I think so. The same with the bathroom. What was the first... Was that the first original joke that you made?
That was the first original, thing. I wrote like 5 minutes. And then I didn't know that you're... supposed to repeat yourself. Like, I didn't know that you continued to do the same jokes just to get them better. I thought I was like, well, that topic's done. I'm going to do that. So I did a new 5 minutes every time for the first like six times, I guess, that I did it in Rochester. I mean, I was like half blackout drunk every single time. I did one.
Are you good when you're half black? Like, are you slurring? Are you more charismatic?
No, I'm not good. No.
First of all, who knows?
Secondly, I can be. I have had great drunk shows, but I've also had like fall off a cliff, awful fucking drunk shows. So it's just not something that I'd like to do. I do perform high though. That's fun.
Did you get nervous? Like, oh, I'm drinking. I remember the first time I did stand up and I asked the guy to be on. I didn't know how anything worked. And he said, yeah, maybe after everybody's done, you know, I'll get you on. And I'm like, all right, let me have a beer to relax. I drink a beer. I'm like, okay, let me have another one. I took like half, and I was a big drinker, but I'm taking the second half of the beer and I'm like, what did I do? This is too much. I went over the line. Were you not nervous at all?
I was really nervous. Like I've been trying to be a performer or something. I didn't know what I wanted to do. But comedy was very clearly always the answer. Like, I just had other ideas as to what my comedy would have been, but it's always been stand-up. So I went there, and whenever I'm about to invest myself fully into something, I get super nervous, anxious, and like almost like physically sick about it. So
Do you enjoy that?
I guess I must, you know, subconsciously. I mean, I don't on the surface, but I do. Something about me drives me towards that shit. But I remember I got my first laugh before I even got on stage the first night I did it, which actually helped because another open micer was on stage. And I think she was like a Rochester pro or something like that. And so she was doing some crowd work because in Rochester at open mics, 50 fucking actual audience members would show up because, you know, in New York, it's 13 pissed off comics writing in their notebooks, waiting for their own turn to say their horseshit.
Wow.
So, but in Rochester, it's actual people. So, you know, you'd get hecklers, you'd get audience interaction. It'd be actually like kind of a real show. And so this woman immediately picked on my table because we were like five college kids getting drunk, just trying to like anesthetize myself to be able to do this. And she goes, what do you study to me? And I was like, oh, communications. She's like, communications? What the fuck are you going to do with that? And I go, get on stage right after you. and it hit really hard. And I was like, like, you know, in my body, just absolutely rattling. But just being like that, I just feel like I mainlined crack. Right. Like, I feel so good. This is crazy. I already got it out of the way. And then when I was, it's funny because when I first started, I was very much still an athlete and still in that kind of mentality. So I was like,
how jock-like were you? Because you're describing, you bring up the athlete, but you don't come across jock-like, but it seems like you had some sort of elements where you have to bring up that you used to be an athlete.
Well, when I'm in it, I'm jock-like. When I'm playing, I'm a fucking athlete. Like I'm in it to win. I don't mind
talk
it.
Shit.
Yeah. Yes. I don't mind embarrassing people. I don't mind getting physical. I'm like I really exercise my Viking when I'm out there in any sport capacity.
And when you're outside, it's like namaste.
Yeah, exactly. When I'm outside, it's kind of like, okay, I don't have to do that now. That's great. That really relieved me of a lot of potential anger.
You channeled a lot of shit then.
Yeah, for sure. So I used to stand on the side getting ready to be announced, and like there's no curtain or anything, people are looking at me and I'm literally jumping up and down like I'm fucking ready to run out before for introductions before a game. And so I like bound on stage, and of course it's Rochester, so the stage is like taped together and I'm like almost smashing into everything.
But like before a Kevin Hart or a Chris Rock special when they're punching the air.
Exactly.
Like, here we go, but you're right there.
Exactly. Yeah, and everybody's watching me prepare, just like, oh, this kid has some severe psychological issues.
But did it help you though?
Yeah, it did. Yeah. I think so. I was a lot of energy when I first started, and I still definitely perform with a lot of energy and I'm animated, but I've learned how to not just jizz that out. You know
so
what I mean?
So you're not amping yourself up anymore.
I'm actually calming myself a little more. Yeah, because I want to start from kind of an even keel and build. Mm.
Do you understand? And now, well, you're not drinking now because, by the way, congratulations.
Thank you.
Either I don't want to guess, everything's fluid now. Either you and your wife or one of them is pregnant.
Yes.
And so congrats. Do you see a difference with your performances?
I do, yeah. I mean, I am a far better writer, performer, disciplined comedian when I'm not drinking. It's for sure. And if drinking wasn't so fun and something I didn't actually enjoy doing, I would probably say I'm never drinking again. And at this point, I don't know when the next time I am drinking. I just don't know if I'm making the commitment for forever. You know,
would you be able to say no drinking before stage, or because you go on pretty much every night, that would just mean no drinking?
Yeah, I mean, that would basically mean no drinking, because if I was doing one show, maybe on the road, like if I was like, oh, I'll only drink after the shows, that would be kind of reasonable. But if I was you know, in the city, I'm doing spots starting at 7 p.m. and then ending at like 1 a.m. Mm-hmm. So there's no real point in getting started at 1 a.m. Right. I would just rather smoke pot.
Going back real quick, do you think it's comedians' faults at all that hecklers are confused when they can jump in and when they can't? When you bring up this comedian pointing at your table, what did you graduate from? But then the regular person, they're supposed to know when we shut it off and we're not literally working together. Is that the comedian's fault, or should the human beings just know all the rules?
I don't like to victim blame.
Right, but you are a pawn and I will use you when I want.
I think, yes, it is. It's kind of like a weird muddied water, right? Right. So the consumer now, for the most part, but is more educated. They understand comedy. People now say, great set, you know, after where nobody knew what the fuck that was 10 years ago.
Call back!
Yeah, exactly. You know? So they're moderately educated, but they still cannot help themselves from getting into something that they know they shouldn't be doing. So, you know, even I've had comedy fans, huge fans of my podcast, come out and they were the biggest fucking problem of the night. Right. And it's like, so what are you doing? Like what's happening? But I do think that it's somewhat comedians' faults based on like the glorification of the heckler video, fucking smash, comedian destroys dipshit in the crowd. Right. Meanwhile, he like paid the guy $10 to say the first fucking awful thing. I'm talking about one person, but who cares?
Ooh, I love that. Oh,
that's funny. I bet the guitar was fake that he smashed over the dude's head.
No, that was real and that was Boston.
Just between us, when you're at somebody else's show,
yes,
do you enjoy a heckler?
Not really. I mean, the only time that I've enjoyed it is when it comes and goes quickly,
right?
And it's not a lasting thing. Like I've seen Attell cope with audience members in maybe the most brilliant way I've seen any comedian do it. I mean, when he's having a difficult set, he's even better. It's like he digs his heels in, he brings it out of people, especially if they're rowdy, and he's just like, he's the ultimate comedy jujitsu. Like anybody
he's
that's
very comfortable on
he
stage.
Is so comfortable. Yeah,
he's also had so much time on stage at this point.
Yeah, and he just he just writes jokes. He's a factory. He is constantly, his brain is working. He has a lockbox memory. Somehow, after all those years of boozing, he just has a catalog and a reference point for every single joke. And he stays, you know, stays up to date with pop culture references. Like, he's not some old fuck that's like, you know, still talking about old TV shows.
I remember Jim Florentine was on Keith and the Girl, and we were going over an album he put out, and he put it out knowing it was ridiculous, but an old stand-up album, I believe it was called Awful Jokes. And he had a section on heckles that he'd practice to respond to. But they were so specific, like, this is if a doctor heckles me. I'm like, how do you know the guy's all past?
That's so funny.
But you would have to go out angry almost, right? You're almost encouraging it. You're probably staring at somebody hoping they'll say something back. I remember getting...
it's like walking around with a gun.
Did we play that on the show?
Yeah.
So we're commenting on his album with him.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was funny.
We ironically heckled him.
That's cool.
I remember being robbed, and then I thought, you know what? I'm going to walk around with a wallet with one of those die kits. And hopefully get robbed. But it's like, then it's whose fault is that? I'm walking around and, you know, I'm like, let's go 2 a.m. Brownsville. Just walk around. Like, at what point are you asking for?
Yeah, also you get your wallets mixed up later. Right. You open up to pay for something in a bodega. You just shoot blue in your face.
Shit. Break. That's a coincidence because I want to tell you about something actually. One second, Mike. I want to talk about HelloFresh, the new way that I cook.
Oh, yeah. You cook really well now, too.
HelloFresh is a meal delivery kit service. They shop, they plan, they deliver step-by-step recipes and pre-measured ingredients. So you just cook, eat, enjoy, fuck. That's what I do. Never made one of these and not had sex. That's a true story.
That's really cool. I got to get on that.
Yeah, it makes conquering the kitchen a reality with deliciously simple recipes.
And everything is divided up already for you. So it's three different meals that come in three different bags that have all the ingredients in it.
It takes 30 minutes to cook these four-star meals max.
Yeah, don't you find that it takes a little bit shorter now? Maybe because we got used to it and know how to read the ingredients and the whole recipe and it moves faster.
Less than two pots and pans, minimal cleanup. Make family dinners fuss-free with HelloFresh's picky eater kid-tested and approved family plan recipes. Three plans to choose from, classic, veggie, and family, with the option to switch between for when your tastes change. You're not locked in. You gotta live life. For $80 off your first month of HelloFresh, go to HelloFresh.com/opening80. That's opening for my opening line, 80. HelloFresh.com/opening80 and enter opening 80.
80 for the $80 you'll save.
There you go. Oh, it's a treat. All right. Sorry, Mike. That was rude.
Break over.
When did it make you feel, fuck, I'm a comedian? The first time you're paid or after that?
No, not the first time I got paid.
Have you gotten paid?
Yeah. Oddly enough, I'm still waiting on that. There's so many of those moments, right? Because I could tell you recently, I could tell you a recent moment where I followed or met somebody, you know, that I looked up to, and it was a comedian that knew my name and knew my material. And I'm like, holy shit, I'm in this. You know what I mean? Right. I mean, hanging out at the Comedy Cellar, and I've been there for a year now, but it hasn't lost its glow to me. It hasn't lost the fact that, like, I knew about it before I started doing comedy. It was this mecca that I dreamt of, like, even just going there to watch people perform. I'm hanging out with some of, you know, even though they're my quote unquote peers, they're still some of the greatest minds and comedy minds in the entire world.
Right.
So just to be able to be around those people feels like affirmation. Like, I'm kind of like, okay, I'm at the table. Maybe I'm not exactly where I'm at or where I'd like to be at career wise, but this is like, this is kind of better. Right. You know what I mean?
You ever hear a comedian say, I'm where I'd like to be? I don't think Ray Romano is where he likes to be.
That's, you know, true.
I
mean? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. What's funny is I was, as you were saying that, cause you're like, oh, I have a lot of moments, and I'm realizing earlier you said, now that I'm doing okay, but you're doing great. This is you're living in a lot of ways a dream.
Yeah. No, yeah. I am. Yeah. I think if I try to remind myself of this, if I told my 12-year-old self, the kid that did stand up, that at 34 I would be married to the girl I already knew and probably was actually dating at the time. I was doing stand-up comedy in New York City, doing every single club, being on the road, and making my entire living that way. I mean, what could I have asked for more?
Yeah, that's huge. What were some
probably
of the
a special. That's how, yeah, it's so funny. It's like, oh yeah, I'm so zen. And then, nope, this.
What were some of the marks that where you're like, okay, I think I'm a stand up now. No, now. How about now?
Yeah, I think doing it, like, so it, check spots are one of those things that you have to go through. Like, I handed out flyers for a long time, and for a full year actually, in Times Square, just to get some stage time every single night. I ended up doing like probably,
what's your move, asking strangers if they like comedy?
No, I went into Charlie O's and drank and then like threw out the flyers and then went back.
That's a move.
Yeah, that is literally my move. Me and this guy Thompson Plyler, who no longer does comedy, but he was a very funny guy, we both would just go out to Times Square, literally hand out like 15 and then be like, let's just drink.
Sometimes those businesses, they put your name on the back of the flyer so they can see how many you passed out. Would you ever check and be like, nothing's on here, free day?
For sure. Yeah. Okay. I mean, there was no way to tell it at all. And then eventually the policy changed where you had to like fucking chauffeur the people, actually physically walk them to the club.
Oh, wow.
It was like super uncomfortable.
I'd be into it. And then you start walking me. I'm like, fuck this.
No, exactly. I mean, it was like, I had to say, I was like, you know, it's dependent on you whether or not you want me to continue talking to you for this whole thing. I was like, I don't want to make you feel uncomfortable. Right. I pitched you. It's a great show. We can be friends if you want.
Right. This is so interesting. Like, we're walking consensually to the comedy club, right? I just want a very enthusiastic yes from both of you, please.
You're walking ahead, but not turning around. Still back there?
Yeah.
All right. Thumbs up behind you.
Yeah, we were both wearing wrist leashes, so they wouldn't leave me.
This is Velcro. You have a choice.
Right. But also, like, you know, I was one of the not so seedier people handing out these flyers, but then you'd get people from Ha Comedy Club that literally would run up on you frantic eyed and be like, hey dude, you want to go to a comedy show? And I'm like, oh, I'm doing the same
sniffing
thing.
Coke.
I swear to God, they'd go, I go, oh, I'm doing the same thing. He goes, oh cool, do I have coke in my nose? And I'm like, yes, you do. You have a tremendous amount of coke in your nose. It's fucking bonkers. That happened to me like 3 times. Those were ridiculous. So barking led me to doing it 7 days a week, right? Mm-hmm. And I was doing like 15 to 20 shows every single week. I couldn't believe it. I felt like a comic. I was like, holy shit, I'm in New York. I've just started. This is it. I'm in the middle of it, right? And then I start getting guest spots and I start getting, you know, I'm
where they're actually asking you to come at a specific time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Specific time. I passed out flyers. I sat people. I answered phones. I did literally everything at Broadway Comedy Club. I hid myself for about 2 years.
It's like an internship.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Yeah. Just at that club. And just took every just negative vibe possible in that space and just weathered it.
It's a tough club.
Yeah. I mean, it's since gotten a bit better. Like I've been back there and people seem friendlier, but at that time in 2009, 2010, it was just like, I mean, it was for whatever reason, super dark and very negative. And everybody just did not want to be there, from the managers down to, you know, even the comedians.
That makes a lot of sense. It was around that time that, Keith, you recorded your
annual. I was there.
Okay.
I was there. I may have sat that room.
Okay. So really?
I think so. Yeah.
Well, it was packed, and our people are so sweet because we actually do warn them. We're like, the heckling's not cute, you know, and it's we'll just walk you out. You know, we're there to have a good time. Everyone's there to enjoy themselves. Be nice to the waiters. Like, we're definitely, like, our people are very proud. They'll come back from like seeing one of your shows on the road and be like, and I was the best audience member, and I said hello after, and you know, because it's important. You're going to see a show. And Broadway just treated them like shit.
Of course, yeah.
I mean, we packed the room, and I don't even know if it was a weekend, and some people didn't even get their second drink, and then, you know, you got to start arguing, and then they turned on the lights as soon as it was over. It's like, come on, man, vibe. Like,
right. And lied about what we sold to the point where we walked them around to each computer and made them show us, of course, they were lying. Do you still play there?
I do, yeah. I mean, you know, and since, like I said, I've had a more positive experience. I mean, but I remember doing check spots, and like,
And check spots are when people are
paying their checks. So yeah, they're the least attentive audience of all time, and very loud, and also angry that they just realized a beer is $13.
Yeah.
So, you know what I mean? So it's war. It's flat out verbal war.
And they're doing math and nobody likes
it. Right. And especially in Times Square, 53rd and 8th, where, you know, the majority of the audience are kind of ESL, English as a second language, and they're there to see comedy, in quotes. Right. They don't know stand up. They don't know anything. They just got kind of, you know, some of them thought they were going to see Tina Fey. It's a wild experience. And so, you know, that's where I feel like I got my chops a little bit and learned how to crowd control and kind of power through and write quick hitting stuff that's going to get attention right away.
Do you remember kind of moving into that space of I know how to respond to this? Do you remember some responses to this day?
Yeah, but they were so inappropriate. It was like 2010.
Okay, all right. I'll let that go.
it's nothing I'm proud of. I mean, I put up videos on Instagram and I put up my first video from like 5 years, you know, 5 years into comedy. There's mostly not even a record of me doing comedy until I released my album. So I put this clip up, and even that, I'm like, oh, I like this bit, and it's well written and it's sarcastic and tongue in cheek, but it's still like, I can see why I dropped it, you know, but I put it out.
Yeah, okay. I get it.
Yeah.
And the words keep changing. are you on the outs with any clubs after doing it for so many years?
Not particularly. So Broadway, I hid myself there for 2 years. I gained a close relationship with a lot of the staff. I was, you know, booking people, taking reservations, fucking seating calls, all that stuff. And then my buddy Chris DeStefano was actually represented by them in a small capacity, like for like 2 weeks.
Right.
They kind of got him like a daytime TV audition or something like that. Okay. And, you know, we were 8 months in, so we were like, I need a manager, of course. Mm-hmm. And so
really not knowing what a manager does, but
of course, not at all. Yeah. Just thinking it was the keys to success. Yeah. That's it. And so Chris rose really quickly. And I think he got Guy Code like on his own without their help. And since then, I think Dennis Leary's company, Apostle, reached out to him and they wanted to represent him. And so, of course, he made the correct decision and did that and signed with them and has now had an incredible, you know, career and will continue to. But there was bad blood, obviously, between Broadway and Chris. And for some reason, I was stuck in the middle of it. And I was banned because I was told that it was my duty to tell them that Chris was about to sign with a new manager. I still have the email. I read the email like 3 weeks ago and I couldn't believe it. It was like a 2-page love letter in 8th grade. It was so embarrassing. It's like, it's like Jesus Christ, dude, like get a fucking grip. This guy just writing like, how dare you both? I had him sleep on my couch and I got him headshots. And it's like, yeah, I also heard that he woke up and you were standing over his couch looking at him creepy. So, you know, let's not get crazy. Guy that still works there.
Does he say to you in this letter, so you both are banned from the club, or is it just understood? I'm not getting phone calls anymore.
Yeah, he said something like, I think it's in your best interest to take some time.
You'll never work in this town again.
Yeah, and I think it was so ridiculous. But then
Mike writes back, I appreciate the idea. I'm still going to show up.
It was actually the best thing that happened to me because, you know, I got good and being at Broadway and getting all that stage time was so beneficial and I'll always be grateful for that. But I was stuck there. It was an insular ecosystem. So I didn't meet anybody outside of that. I didn't have any connections to the actual scene. So being banned forced me to go perform at these places that, frankly, I was afraid of because I thought it was cliquish. They'd judge me. It would be horrifying and they've already have friends. All of that was true.
Isn't it funny that we're adults? And like we've had this thought when we were 5, we had it when it was 10, 15.
Never ends.
Yeah. Like they already have their friends and I'm going to be the new friend.
Look at Paulie Walnuts' mother in Sopranos. She goes to the nursing home and she's like, they all are already friends.
Yeah. We're always scared to make friends. Like we're all dying to love each other. Mm-hmm. We're just like, will you be my friend?
Well, here's the big problem that comedians are doing with these clubs. Mm. They make it public that being a comedian is so important to them.
Yeah.
That it's what they were born and bred to do. That's the only thing that makes them happy. And these club owners go, oh yeah?
Right.
Well, here's $5.
Yeah.
Dumb. Not me. I go, podcasting. Yeah, who knows? Obviously, it's what I need to do.
By the way, those $5 are like five, you know, Apple bucks. Like right. $5 right. to their own booze.
Yeah, I've already spent it before I got there.
So then they just do whatever they want. And, you know you're at their mercy. I know women, including the girl I'm dating now, that has been banned from clubs when the owner found out they were dating me just because she's dating somebody and not single. Mm. And all the women are talking. They know what's happened to them too. And they're like, well, you got to wait it out like 2-3 more months until the jealousy goes away. And yikes, then you'll be back, which she was. And it's like, so what a bananas fucking game out there. You guys got to quit saying, yes, of course.
Yeah.
Teach the club owners correctly at a young age how to respect people. But until that happens, stop saying you love it. Go another day.
I do have a lot of friends, though, that have given up comedy for podcasting because they found it too restrictive. Stand-up was too based on, you know, pleasing others, whereas podcasting is like you can kind of set your own rules.
Well, there's also a lot of respect in that I'm recording it and putting it out. So when you turn it off because you don't like it, you're not going, boo!
Right.
I don't like this joke.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. You enjoy that in your car on the commute to work.
Yeah.
If you had to give advice to you specifically, mm-hmm. very personal, what do you wish you knew at a younger age?
Hang out more. Like do the social things. Even it may have come at the... I'm glad I didn't because... I did. I think I had a healthy mix of it. But like... it may have been at the expense of my now marriage if I followed the rules and had a quicker trajectory. But I think it's just continue writing, getting up on stage constantly. There is no shortcuts. Write, head down, be nice to everybody. Don't be a piece of shit. Don't get a reputation for, you know, using people. If you say something and promise somebody something, follow through with it, or at the very least, don't ghost them. Have the conversation, treat people like adults. Like, all that kind of basic stuff is more or less what I needed to learn as an adult just in my everyday life anyway. So I was a slow learner with stand-up because I had to be. And I think I'm only good now. I'm better now than I was, you know, ever.
Don't say you're good. Just better. I'm always better.
an attitude.
Well, I can tell you that you do have that reputation of not... Because there's, you know, a lot of dudes in comedy, women are already talking about, we have the spreadsheets and stuff like that, but you are very respectful.
I'm sorry, one second. Yes, do you know that's true? Like, without exaggeration, there are literally, I'm being serious.
It's funny because that's what I assumed, but I never knew it.
Yeah.
I just knew women were more organized than men, so I figured.
It's you know what
it is? I thought it was the cloud. I didn't know it was going to be a spreadsheet.
It sounds really mean, but it's not like.
Well, if you had to do it, you had to do it.
Yeah, it's not a target. It's more like, hey, we know that you're going to end up maybe being on these shows because that's what we're all going for sort of thing. So, you know, just watch out this person, you know, maybe don't be in a room alone with this person, like bring someone, or this person might not be worth doing the show because he will take his dick out, you know, and it's not just one person. Mm. It's like, oh yeah, I had this. As soon as somebody posts something, it's like, oh yeah, I had this experience. Right. And it is the exact same experience. So,
well, of course it's not one person. That'd be a weak spreadsheet.
And so every time it sounds like a witch hunt, it's again, we just want to go to work.
Yeah.
Right. But you know, like,
what are you doing tonight? And like, you put your fingers together. Spreadsheets.
Right.
Wine and spreadsheets. You bring the chocolate.
But if you think about it, guys are doing spreadsheets on women also. They're just not organizing it. But the guys are going like, oh, this one will give you a hard time on the pronouns, so don't book her. Or this one is, you know, too feminist, so don't book her. Or this one already blew me, so, you know, so... Fuck that. Like, it's already a done deal.
Do you think comics are doing that or mostly producers / booker scum?
Well, the thing is a lot of times the comic is the producer and booker, especially since, you know, we run our own shows, we run our own podcasts, you know, we own our own networks, things like that.
But a lot of those people, you can tell what they're going to be. Do you know what I mean? Like, if a comic is also a producer and you watch them on stage, you can tell that they're going to be a very good producer one day.
I think now we're able to tell a little bit more about people's personality because we have all this access and the spreadsheets, and we're being more upfront about what's going on behind the scenes with each other in regular business and comedy world. So we're aware of it, and so we're not filling in the blanks. Whereas a person with a certain personality would maybe more turn me on. Now I'm like, oh, this person's going to fuck me. Like, and not in a nice way. Like, they're going to screw me over because that's what this personality is now. Like, I get it a little more. And I think you guys get it a little more too.
Sure.
And I'm listening to guys because a lot of you will actually tell on each other without saying anything. You'll be like, you know, there's certain times where you're sort of worn it. Like, you know, guys are scum. And I'm like, no, you're, I was just talking about, so the you all know guys are scum thing is now, he's operating on the men can act like this and you just hold on him without realizing. In a good way.
Gotcha.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's just tough when me and him to have a conversation because we're both trying to listen. Nothing really gets done lately.
What a new world.
Mike Cannon, always a pleasure. Thank you very much, my friend.
Thank you.
We'll talk to Mike more, of course, on Keith and the Girl, and you can check out all the past times he's been on there. And now the closing theme song. What you just heard was my opening line. Please subscribe and tell your friends. Go to myopeningline.com.